Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 5. The demigods appeal to the Lord. Text 32. Padao Mahi Iyam Sakrita Eva Yasya Chatuvida Yatra Hi Bhutasarga Sa Vai Mahapurusha Atmatantra Prasidatam Brahma Mahavibhuti. Padomahiyam Swakritai Vayasya Chatur Vido Yatra Hi Bhuta Sarga Savai Mahapurusha Atma Tantra Prasidatam Brahma Mahavibhuti. Padao, his lotus feet. Mahi, the earth. Iyam, this. Swakrita, created by himself. Eva, indeed. Yasya, of whom? Chatuvida, of four kinds of living entities. Yatra, wherein? He, indeed. Bhutasarga, material creation. Sa, he. Vai, indeed. Mahapurusha, the supreme person. Atmatantra, self-sufficient. Prasidatam, may he be merciful to us. Brahma, the greatest. Mahavibhuti, with unlimited potency. Translation. On this earth there are four kinds of living entities who are all created by him. The material creation rests on his lotus feet. He is the great supreme person, full of opulence and power. May he be pleased with us. Please repeat. On this earth, there are four kinds of living entities who are all created by Him. The material creation rests on His lotus feet. He is the great Supreme Person, full of opulence and power. May He be pleased with us. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The word Mahi refers to the five material elements: earth, water, air, fire, and sky, which rest upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mahat Padam Punya Yasho Murare. The Mahatattva, the total material energy, rests on His lotus feet. For the cosmic manifestation is but another opulence of the Lord. In this cosmic manifestation, there are four kinds of living entities: Jarayuja, those born from embryos; Andaja, those born from eggs; Svedaja, those born from perspiration; and Ubijja, those born from seeds. Everything is generated from the Lord, as confirmed in the Vedanta Sutra, Janmadiyasyataha. No one is independent, but the Supreme Soul is completely independent. Janmadiyasyato Vyad Itaras Charteshu Abhigya Swarat. The word Swarat means independent. We are dependent, whereas the Supreme Lord is completely independent. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is the greatest of all. Even Lord Brahma, who created the cosmic manifestation, is but another opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The material creation is activated by the Lord, and therefore the Lord is not a part of the material creation. The Lord exists in His original spiritual position. The universal form of the Lord, Vairaja Murti, is another feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation again. On this earth there are four kinds of living entities who are all created by Him. The material creation rests on His lotus feet. He is the great Supreme Person, full of opulence and power. May He be pleased with us. In the present verse, Lord Brahma and the demigods continue to pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for His mercy. They are in difficulty, and as devotees, they understood that their real hope and their real shelter, their real strength, was in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus they approached him. Devotees are different from demons. Demons generally believe in their own strength, their own intelligence, their own resources. Whereas devotees depend on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is their Supreme Father. He is the origin of everything. Janmadeyasyataha. He is the origin of the living entities and the different types of bodies that they inhabit in the material world. And naturally, he is their protector and maintainer and guardian. When Rupa and Sanatan met Lord Chaitanya for the first time, at that time they were known as Dabir Khas and Sakir Malik, they recited a verse from the Stotra Ratna by Yamunacharya. Bhavantam evanucharan nirantara prashanta nihesha manoratantara kadaiham ekantika nityakinkara aham parishyami sanatha jivita. This verse was quoted by Srila Prabhupada to me once on Juhu Beach. At the time, I was feeling particularly wretched and miserable, and Srila Prabhupada was walking and he stopped, placed his cane firmly in the sand, and looked at me and recited the verse. It was only many years later that I came across the verse in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he translated the verse and commented on it at the same time. The idea is that the devotee is praying to the Lord that when will I be engaged as your eternal loving servant? Until then, I am being conducted by the chariot of my mind, Manorata. It's often translated as mental concoction, but literally, Manorata means the chariot of the mind. But when I will engage as your permanent eternal servant, then I will be free from the disturbances of the mind, and I will feel happy to have such a fitting master. Srila Prabhupada especially commented on the verse Sanatha. Natha means Lord, like Vaikunthanath, Dwarkanath, Mathuranath, Radhanath. And Sa means with. So Srila Prabhupada said the goal of life, the goal of a devotee, the goal of anyone, is to be sanatha, with master. And the opposite of sanatha is anatha, which means without master. And anatha is also translated as orphan. If we are without a master, we are an orphan, like an orphan. And then Srila Prabhupada pointed to the dogs on Juhu Beach, and he said that the street dogs who are without masters are always in anxiety. They don't know when they will get food. They don't know where they will sleep. Children can throw stones at them. Bigger animals can terrorize them. They're always full of anxiety. And then he pointed to a dog with a master. He was quite stout and strong. His master was also like that. And they were walking like very confidently on Juhu Beach. And Srila Prabhupada said that the dogs who are sanatha, they have no cares. They know I have my master and he will protect me. They're not in anxiety. Where will I get food? Where will I sleep? What will happen to me? So in the same way, the living entity is constitutionally the eternal servant of the Lord, Jiva Swarupai, Krishna and Nityadas, and he can only be satisfied when he's in his constitutional position as the Lord's eternal servant. And in any other position, false position, artificial position, he'll be in anxiety, anatha, like an orphan. So the demigods, they know that the Lord is their shelter, and in difficulty they approach him. Whereas the demons do not approach the Lord. They may depend, you know, on their own strength and intelligence and resources, or they may take shelter of another material person. This is quite common. They may even take shelter of a great demigod, like Lord Brahma. Hiranyakasipu was, you could say, a devotee of Lord Brahma, and he received many boons from him. But still, when the time came, his boons could not protect him from death at the hands of the Supreme Lord. Similarly, Ravana was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. But when Lord Ramachandra wanted to kill him, no one, even Lord Shiva, could save him. And therefore it is said, Krishna mare rake ke, Krishna rake mare ke. If Krishna wants to protect someone, who can kill him? And if Krishna wants to kill someone, who can protect him? So ultimately, we're dependent on Krishna. And Krishna alone is independent. Ekale Ishwara Krishna Arasabritya. Only Krishna is the supreme controller, and all others are his servants. Only Krishna is Swarat. So, when we depend on Krishna, we are protected. And when we try to depend on our own intelligence and resources or other material people, we are in a very precarious position. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes the line, Mahat padam punya yasho murare, that comes from a beautiful verse from the end of the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. Samasritaye pada palavam padam mahat padam punya yasho murare Bhavam buddhir vatsa padam param padam 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 yadvi padam natesham. The verse means that for one who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, the enemy of the Mura demon, Murari, the vast ocean of material existence, of birth and death, becomes just like a puddle contained in the hoof print of a calf. Although there's danger at every step, the devotee crosses right over it. So that is the value of taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And Srila Sanatan Goswami, in his commentary on this verse, in the 10th canto, comments on this word, or phrase, compound, Mahat padam. Mahat generally is taken to mean this material creation, this cosmic manifestation, mahatattva. But mahat also means a great soul. Mahat seva dwara mahur vimuktes. That by serving mahats, great souls, the door to liberation opens. So Srila Sanatana Goswami comments that Mahat Padam means that the lotus feet of Krishna are the shelter even of Mahats or Mahatmas, who themselves are the shelter of so many conditioned souls. And in that sense, Mahat Padam calls to mind the definition of Prabhupada. Prabhu, of course, means Lord, and Pad means feet. So Prabhupada means one who has taken shelter at the Lord's lotus feet, like we pray to our spiritual master, our founder Acharya, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine. I offer my respectful obeisances unto His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is very dear to Lord Krishna, having taken shelter at his lotus feet. And another meaning of Prabhupada is he at whose feet many Prabhus, devotees, take shelter. And this is the principle of parampara. This is the principle of shelter. One takes shelter at the feet of a person who has taken shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Person. It's a very simple principle. One can give shelter only if he himself has shelter, real shelter. And real shelter is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through directly, as in the case of Lord Brahma, or through disciplic succession, he can give shelter to others. But he doesn't consider that he's the one who's giving shelter. He considers that Krishna is the one who's giving shelter, or his Guru Maharaj is the one who's giving shelter. I think now of another experience I had on another beach in Santa Barbara or Carpinteria. I was chanting my rounds, and was trying to chant with attention, trying to go deeper and deeper. And I was going deeper and deeper. And I was overwhelmed, I became overwhelmed with a sense of the suffering of people. First, you know, the suffering of people close to me, then just the suffering of people in general. And then I noticed some of the people at the beach trying to enjoy, but somehow I could see actually they were not enjoying, they were suffering. They were in anxiety and they were suffering. There were some surfers, whom Srila Prabhupada called sufferers. And then just all the creatures. There were birds on the beach, you know, sandpipers. You know, ordinarily we think, oh, you know, how cute, how sweet. But I could see underneath it all, they were suffering, they were in anxiety. Anatta, they were anatta. They didn't know where they were going to get food, didn't know where they were going to sleep, didn't know how they were going to live to the next day. And then there were pelicans. They fly very high, the brown pelicans in Santa Barbara. And they, like, suddenly they just, like, swoop down, straight down, and plunge into the water. So they must be looking for some prey. And then when they see, oh, there's some fish, then they just dive straight down, plunge into the water. So it seems very picturesque, but I was thinking, how much anxiety there is. Looking for food, all the time looking for food. And it must be very sort of painful for them. I mean, yeah, their body allows it, but I think it must be painful for them to come plunging down and crash into the water and hope to get some prey and not really be sure if they would get one or not. And then some dolphins came along. They have quite a variety of species of life, the Carpinteria Beach. And again, I usually think, oh, how sweet, the dolphins, they're going up and down, playing in the water. I thought they're in anxiety, they're suffering. They also don't know where they're going to get food. They don't know if they're going to be attacked. They're also suffering. So this sense, not just sense of suffering, but feeling the suffering of these living entities was starting to overwhelm me. I mean, it was really getting to be too much. And I thought, wow, you know, if this keeps going on like this, I'm not going to be able to function. And there's like, there's too much suffering. There's too much suffering going on. And it's like I'm feeling it all. Oh yeah, the last one. A little ladybug landed on my left hand. And again, oh ladybugs. I don't know if it's something from our childhood. We thought they bring good luck. And, oh, a ladybug. I thought, oh God, it's another creature suffering. Just another creature suffering. I thought, you know, this is really getting to be too much. I'm not going to be able to maintain my sanity if I keep feeling the suffering of all the creatures. And then I had sort of an insight, a revelation or insight, that the basic problem with me and with all the other living entities, but specifically the basic problem with me is that I turned away from God. I've come into the material world because I turned away from God and wanted to take his place. And that is the fundamental problem. That is the root cause of all other problems. And that God is really the best friend of every living entity. Just like Srila Prabhupada always said, and we've heard and we've repeated, but I actually was feeling it, that God is really the best friend of every living entity. He accompanies the living entities wherever they go, in whatever species of life. He's that jiva in the body of the ladybug, he's there with that jiva. He's there in the heart of the dolphins, he's there in the heart of the pelican, he's there in the heart of the sandpipers, the surfers, the strollers, the dogs, the devotees, the devotees who are close to me, attached to me, to whom I'm attached. He's in the hearts of all of them. He loves them more than I ever could. And he knows what they need. He knows why they're suffering, and he knows what they need. And he can actually help them. I may know someone who's in distress. I may feel for the person. I may care for the person, but I'm so limited and dependent, I may not actually be able to help the person. But Krishna is unlimited and independent. He can actually help the person. And I came back to that simple truth, which again, we've heard many times, and we may have even repeated to others, that the best friend is not he who poses to be the best friend, but But it's he who tells you that Krishna is your best friend. I actually felt it. That, and as soon as I had that realization or insight, immediately that huge burden of feeling the suffering from all the living for the living entities was lifted. You know, in a subtle way, it was the same idea, the same desire to be God, to be the best friend of the living entities. But when I, you know, was more situated in my proper position, I felt that's not my duty to save the living entities. My duty is just, or to be the best friend of the living entities. My duty is just to tell them that Krishna is their best friend and that he will deliver them. And the whole huge burden was lifted. And Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna, only Krishna knows how nice you are, and only Krishna knows the volume of your suffering. It's such a poignant statement. So that is, so Mahat Padam. The lotus feet of Krishna are the shelter for great Mahats or Mahatmas, who themselves are the shelter of so many conditioned souls, such as Prabhupada. He has taken shelter at the Lord's lotus feet, and consequently he is able to give shelter to so many Prabhus. And many people have commented about Srila Prabhupada that he was different from other swamis and yogis and masters and teachers, because he always said Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you should surrender to him. Don't surrender to me, but surrender to Krishna. George Harrison was one of the people who noted that about Srila Prabhupada, the difference between him and so many others. And so we are following in that line. We are meant to follow in that line. Don't surrender to me, surrender to Krishna. Did you want to say something, or were you just emoting? Okay. The other day I was discussing a verse. It is a beautiful verse and a purport from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the gist of the verse is, having developed faith, this is Krishna speaking to Uddhava, having developed faith in my narrations, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, endeavoring to renounce all sense gratification, but sometimes falling into sense gratification, the devotee continues with the process of devotional service in a happy mood, because of his relationship with me, his confidence in his relationship with me. And there are many important points in this verse that are very relevant to us. The first sentence of the purport says that this verse describes the beginning stage of pure devotional service. This is pure devotional service. And so I'll discuss a few of the elements in the verse, because this is the beginning of pure devotional service, and we aspire for pure devotional service. And we all have that experience to some extent or another of wanting to renounce something material and in the end enjoying the very thing that we're trying to renounce. So, first, Jata Shraddha Matkatasu, having awakened faith in my narrations, that's the beginning, Ado Shraddha. And this point of even if one falls down, one continues with the process of devotional service. The purport says that the devotee, the mood of the devotee is that he will never give up serving Lord Krishna. He will never abandon the process of devotional service in favor of karma, jnana, yoga, tapasya, or anything. The purport, and to me it sounds like Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that even if Lord Brahma himself comes and personally offers me some other engagement, such as karma, jnana, or whatever, I will not even consider it. This is another very important point. The devotee understands that he himself does not have the power to remove the material desires or attachments from his heart. Only Krishna has the power. And so the devotee thinks that even if Krishna chooses not to remove those material desires and attachments immediately, still, I will not give up my service to Lord Krishna. Even if I have to go to hell for all of my offenses, still I will not give up my service to Lord Krishna. And that is the mood of dependence. That is the mood of surrender. We do our best. We do our best to follow the process of devotional service. We do our best to resist the temptations of material life. But because we're weak, we're dependent, we may fail to some degree or another, at one time or another. But we never give up our service to Lord Krishna. We never give up our faith that Krishna is our Lord and Master, our Natha, our protector and maintainer, our guardian. And therefore, the devotee continues in a happy mood. He's happy aham parish yayusyami sanata jivita. He's happy because he has a fitting master. Sometimes that sanata jivita means like a living master, fitting living master. So he's happy. He knows his father is there to protect him. And even if the father does not relieve him immediately of his material desires and attachments, still he's confident in his father's protection. He knows that his father knows what is best for him and will do what is best for him. And there's a nice verse offered by King Prithu to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in which he says that people generally identify with the body, which is produced of the three modes of nature, and therefore they ask for so many things in relation to the body. But, and here Prithu Maharaj is praying to the Lord, he says that, but just as a father does whatever is best for the child without being asked by the child, so you do whatever is best for me without me asking. You know what's best. I'm not going to tell you what's best for me. You know what's best. So you just do it, and I will accept it. And that also calls to mind the example of the chatuk bird. It's also in a very beautiful verse by Rupa Goswami. Actually, Srila Prabhupada quoted that verse on a morning walk in Chicago. He was walking on the street and he came to a car that was the brand name of the car. It had the name Thunderbird. So Srila Prabhupada said, is there any such thing as a Thunderbird? So one of the devotees said, well, it's Thunderbird is a name of an Indian chief. So they named the car after the Indian chief, Thunderbird. The Srila Prabhupada said, yes, but is there any bird, Thunderbird? And then Prabhupada said, we have got Thunderbird, the chatuk bird. The chatuk bird will only drink water from the cloud. He will not take water from the ground or from any other source. And so he'll always be hovering under the cloud, waiting for some drops of nectarian water to fall into his mouth. But even if the cloud doesn't give water, if the cloud gives thunder and lightning, still the bird will not leave the cloud. And it's a very beautiful verse because Krishna's sham, the color of a monsoon cloud. So one of the devotees asked, in what connection does Rupa Goswami give this example? And Srila Prabhupada explained that a devotee will take mercy only from Krishna. He will not take mercy from the material world. And even if Krishna doesn't give mercy, of course, it is a type of mercy, but in this context, Srila Prabhupada said, even if Krishna doesn't give mercy, if he gives, thunder and lightning, it becomes difficulty. Still, the devotee will not look for, will not take mercy from the material world. He won't look for shelter in the material world. He will just wait for Krishna's mercy. And that is the mood of surrender, the dependent devotee, Sanatha Jivita. So that is our prayer to take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna through disciplic succession, Mahat Padam, take shelter of Mahat, Srila Prabhupada, through him Krishna, through Parampara Krishna. Ultimate is Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? His Holiness Keshava Bharati Das Goswami Maharaj. Insight, and your insight gave me an insight. Again, these are not things that we haven't heard before or even said, but they're entering our hearts in a deeper level, and therefore we're getting insights. But that's true. That Krishna is feeling for these living entities, and although he's the one ultimately who delivers them, but because the living entities have turned away from Krishna and are looking externally in the material world, Krishna sends his devotees, or devotees come forward in the mood of service to Krishna in the material world. So these conditioned souls that are looking outside of themselves will meet someone who will direct them to Krishna. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the spiritual master is like an extension of Krishna, just like the hand is an extension of the body, and the hand will reach down and pick up something that the body wants. But that abhiman, or conception that I'm a spiritual master, is death. It's death. On Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's appearance day a month ago or so, His Holiness Niranjan Swami was staying with me, and he wanted to read about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, so I gave him my books. And then at the end of the day, before taking rest, I wanted to read something, but all my books were in his room. But I had a series of volumes called Sri Krishna Kathamrita Bindu, which are, from Gopal Jew Press, compiled by Madhavananda Prabhu, very nice disciple of His Holiness Gaura Govinda Swami Maharaj. So I opened it up, and it opened to a page. I guess he ran it like some excerpts every 2 weeks from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's essay, like 100 arguments against mundane mellows. And the first instruction was that a Rasika guru, he will never think of himself as a guru. He'll never think of himself as a guru. If he thinks of himself as a guru, he's disqualified. He's not a true guru. But then a little further down, he says that the disciples of a true guru, although he doesn't have the conception that he's a guru, but the disciples of a true guru will never give up their conviction that he's their guru, or their conception, or their faith that he's their guru. But that's like really... And in the verse, Chinadapi suniche na tararapi sishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his commentary, he makes the same point. Okay, amanina manadena. Amanina means devoid of all sense of false prestige. Manadena, always ready to offer respects to others. So he raises the question, what if someone is in a position of a teacher or guru? He says that he can give instructions to disciples because it's his duty to give instructions. And it doesn't necessarily mean Diksha Guru. It can mean Shiksha Guru, certainly. But always in the mood of being a servant, of just passing on the message that he has received from his spiritual master, in the mood of service. And he said that if one takes pleasure in the thought that I can advise Vaishnavas, I can instruct Vaishnavas, that is like death to a spiritual life. That is opposed to the principle of amanina manadena. Must always be like the humble servant I've been given this knowledge by my spiritual master. I'm passing it on to you. Although I have the knowledge, I'm not applying it. I'm not practicing it. But if I pass on the same knowledge to you, you might actually follow it and practice it. Hare Krishna. Rasaraj Prabhu.
Thank you. I have two questions. First one was, you answered it probably a little bit, but I need more clarification on that. The Uttam Bhakta is supposed to be a person who actually sees everyone serving Krishna. At all points of time, he's not distinguishing between a non-devotee and a devotee. The Madhyam Bhakta, however, then sees the suffering of the devotees, of the non-devotees, and then tries to preach in that mood. It almost seems that because the dearest devotee to Krishna is the one who actually preaches, it seems counterintuitive that Uttam Bhakta is.
As Rasaraj Prabhu says that as His Holiness Keshava Bharati Das Goswami Maharaj quoted, that Lord Krishna says that he who I think the part of the answer comes in the phrasing of the question. But anyway, what Krishna says is that he who explained this secret knowledge to the devotees, he is the dearmost servant to me. There will never be one more dear to me than he, and in the end he will come to me. Rasaraj Prabhu says that the Uttama Bhagavat doesn't preach, because he sees that everyone is already engaged in Krishna's service. Everyone is engaged in Krishna's service except himself. So he sees no need to preach. So it seems odd that the Madhyam Bhagavat, whose preaching is more dear to Krishna than the Uttama Bhagavat. But there's another category. That is the Uttama Bhagavat, who for the sake of serving Krishna in a better way, acts on the platform of a Madhyam Bhagavat. For example, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We have no doubt that they were Mahabhagavatas. But desiring to please the Lord more, understanding the heart of the Lord, that he wants to bring the fallen souls back, home, back to Godhead, for their benefit, not because he needs more servants, they, to some extent, set aside their vision as a Mahabhagavata and see things with the vision of a Madhyam Bhagavata who makes distinctions. Prema Maitri Kripu Peksha Sakaroti Samadhyama. The Madhyam Vaishnav, he loves the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he makes friendship with devotees, he shows mercy. Kripa, the specific function of giving mercy, belongs to the Madhyam Bhagavata. And Upeksha, he neglects the envious. When Lord Chaitanya was like feeling sorry for the sufferings of the living entities, he was speaking with Haridas Thakur. You know, how can they be delivered? And then Haridas Thakur replied, by the holy name. And even those like mlechas and yavanas, they can also be delivered by the holy name, even in Namabhas. And externally, Haridas Thakur himself was a yavana by birth. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked about other living entities who aren't even in human forms. And Haridas Thakur replied, even they can be delivered by the holy name in their different bodies. And Srila Prabhupada... Oh yes, so at one stage, Haridas Thakur tells Lord Chaitanya, my dear Lord, don't be, please do not be in anxiety. The living entities can be delivered by the holy name. And Srila Prabhupada comments that this is the mood of a devotee. The devotee knows that the Lord is in anxiety for the deliverance of the fallen souls, and so the devotee wants to relieve the Lord of his anxiety. And therefore he preaches the message of Bhagavad Gita, spreads the holy name.
May I ask some questions?
Yeah. Yes? Something to what you added. What you said is absolutely true, that the potency of the words of a Mahabhagavata acting on the Madhyam platform is greater than the potency of the words of a Madhyam Bhagavata, although Madhyam Bhagavata is also potent. But I would add, in relation to Srila Prabhupada, that, in my humble opinion, is more than a Mahabhagavata. Yeah, he's like a Shaktivesh avatar. And there can be Mahabhagavatas who don't have the same effect as Srila Prabhupada, because he was more than a Mahabhagavata. He was really an empowered soul. So it doesn't mean that if someone doesn't have the same results as Srila Prabhupada, that they're not a Mahabhagavata.
Yes. And it, as a person becomes
That's right. Paraphrase it to allow for a further answer. But Rasaraj Prabhu is saying that if we're part and parcel of Krishna and Krishna is independent, that means we must also have minute independence, which is true. Our minute independence is we can either choose to depend on Krishna or be under the control of Krishna, or we can choose to be under the control of Maya or, you know, depend on material things. So, yeah, he has independence, so we also have minute independence. But we cannot choose to be completely independent, but we can choose where to place our dependence or where to take shelter. Once Srila Prabhupada gave a class in Seattle, 1968, and one young man in the audience said that, you know, he doesn't feel that he should have to bow down to anyone. You know, he's seeing all the disciples were bowing down to Srila Prabhupada. He said, I don't feel I should have to bow down to anyone. And Srila Prabhupada said, you know, you're meant for bowing down. You know, you cannot avoid bowing down. And if you don't bow down to Krishna and Krishna's representative, you'll be forced to bow down to Maya. You'll be forced to bow down to the repetition of birth, death, disease, and old age. So there's no question of you not bowing down. The question is where, in spite of bowing down, you can be happy.
And so he did, and he said, and after that I felt like none.
if the feeling followed. What I thought you were going to say, but you didn't say, was that if we're part and parcel of Krishna, and we have the tendency to be dependent, and where do we see Krishna's tendency to be dependent? And that is in Vrindavan. Krishna becomes dependent on his devotees. He takes a subordinate position to his devotees. You know, the older cowherd boys, the parental figures, Nanda and Yasoda and other elders, and the gopis, Srimati Radharani. Srila Prabhupada said that like everyone in the material world wants Lakshmi. They're always flattering Lakshmi because they want to get Lakshmi. But Lakshmi is always with Narayan. So if you have Narayan, you always have Lakshmi. But Krishna doesn't have to flatter her. She's so attached to Narayan, she never wants to leave him. And then he said, except in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, Krishna flatters Radharani to get her favor. So Vrindavan has different rules, but that's very confidential and esoteric. That's where Krishna manifests his mood of dependence. Yes. Damodarasakam exemplifies that mood. All right. Thank you very much.